National Public Broadcast of W. Dean Mohammed, Muslim American Leader. The following lecture, titled Independence and Loyalty, was recorded Sunday, August the 20th, in the year 2000.
Thank you, A.M. Donnell Kareem. Brothers and sisters, believers, gathering all, peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum. We wish you peace and a beautiful day inside as it is for us outside. It's a beautiful day out there. Hard to keep people in a small confinement like this. It's so beautiful out there. So I shouldn't talk too long, as my son told me once, little fella. He said, "Daddy, are you going to talk long?" I said, "Well, not too long." I said, "What, you want me to talk for a short while?" He said, "Well, Daddy," say, "talk long and talk short." I understood it. Yes, we had a beautiful day on the grounds of a new facility at 2979 167th Place. And the rain came, started raining a little bit later, but it was late too, so I didn't want to be hold you that out there longer, and I didn't think it was good either, though the rain was like it was starting raining, it was going to rain pretty soon. It already started to sprinkle a little bit, I believe. So I want to speak to you at that time, and in Marshall, at 2979 167th Place, on loyalty, independence and loyalty, independence and loyalty. And though this address that I'm about to give is intended for everybody that's in the hearing range of my voice now, and even those that's not in hearing range, because we are recording it, and there are those who promote my audio tapes, sales of my audio tapes, as well as other publications. So it's for a bigger audience than I'm really speaking to right now, or who's hearing me right now. But this has special, the address has special meaning, at least in some areas, for the followers of the Nation of Islam under the leadership of my father, who passed away in February of 1975. It has special meaning for those people, and I'm one of you. It has very special meaning for me. Some of us miss the most important things that we get in a powerful package. Sometimes the things that reach our mind immediately is what catches us and holds us forever. But some of us, we hear something immediately, and then later something says, boom, wow, that man's saying more than most of us think he's saying. You know? So that's the kind of reaction that many of us had to the message of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we saw a balance, too, in his teachings. We saw that he appeared to be angry on the one hand, but on the other hand, he was very, very peaceful man. Very peaceful man, a very rational man. So I never saw my father as an angry man. I never saw him that way. He had given some speeches And at some point in the speech, he appeared to be angry, and I guess he was angry. But I knew he was one that knew how to get the results he wanted in the audience, too, or from the audience. And sometimes he exaggerated his own excitement, and he exaggerated his own anger just to get the response that he wanted from in the audience and from the audience. Yes, I knew that, too. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he was not his own teacher. He could not have become the leader he became had he not been himself taught by a person. And that person was the man he called God in flesh and person, or God in the flesh, God in the person of W.D. Farrar, or W. Farrar Muhammad. He had more than one name. And that man emphasized to his student, my father, the importance of independence. And I don't believe he came to America to work among us, that is the blacks of Detroit and Chicago and Milwaukee, those that he worked among. I'm talking about my father's teacher. He was right in this city here, speaking on with him. I'm not in Chicago. I'm in Markham. He might have come to Markham. I've never heard yet he did, but he was in Chicago. And his teacher, Mr. Farrar, actually gave long speeches in Chicago with Honorable Elijah Muhammad on the platform with him. And in Milwaukee, after working in Detroit for a year or more. He told my father that he came to this country July 4th, 1930. We used to have to memorize these things by heart. So I know these things. But he did have us memorize. Yes, we were told that he came July the 4th, 1930. Now, July the 4th is Independence Day. Independence for a new nation that came to be called the United States of America. This nation, this great nation. Independence Day. And we celebrate it every July 4th. We celebrate it with fireworks, with picnicking, outing, fireworks, recalling the great victory in war over the old world that didn't want to see this new nation established in this new part of the world that had been discovered in 1492. Yes. So, Independence Day for the United States of America. And I heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad comment on this one day. In fact, I heard him more than once comment on Independence Day. And when he was preaching once, he commented on Independence Day. He said he came on this. He might have used some bad language too. But I forget right now, I can't recall it, and I don't want to recall it. It's a new time we're in. He said he came on this nation's Independence Day, this world, this government's Independence Day, to interrupt their independence. To break their independence, I believe, was his language. My language is interrupt their independence. But I think he said to break their independence. He might have said to break through their independence. I can't recall exactly. But to break their independence. I know what he left on my mind was that Mr. Farrar came against the power, authority, and privileges of your government we call the United States of America. Now that's for sure, I know it. That's what he meant. Because at that time, we were not accorded citizenship rights in this country. But we were asked to go to war, to fight for the country, die just like everybody else who had full citizenship rights and privileges. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad found that message tasteful, not distasteful, but tasteful. He liked it. It was sweet in his mouth. He is a man, God himself in the person, has come to us now. He's going to do our battle for us. They're going to bring this nation down. That's exactly what we were taught, that this nation was going to be brought down. Yes. And then again, I heard Honorable Elijah Muhammad comment on Independence Day, and it reached me. What Honorable Elijah Muhammad said of destruction, it reached me. Yes, it reached me. And I'm not a violent man, but if bad people are making a lot of people out of misery, miserable, I want to see that stopped. But that's not what makes me happy and make me perk up and turn on my energies. It's what somebody says positive to help me be a better person and realize what I want to do positive, in a positive way. I mean, when somebody gives me help for my own soul, help for my own mind, help for my own aspirations, I really give that special attention, not for the moment, but for the moment and hereafter. So the thing that stuck with me of independence for the moment and hereafter, thereafter, and hereafter, still with me. In fact, I'm serving that interest right now. That's why I came out here to speak on this subject. And is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said about our independence. He didn't elaborate, he didn't give any long talk on it. He said he came to give us independence. He came to give us independence. Now, let us look at the word independence. You don't need a whole lot of dictionary and different entries to hear what the dictionary is saying about independence. That's too much for our purpose here this afternoon. For most people, independence means being the boss in some area of their life. Being the boss in some area of their life. Now let's reflect, let's go back a little bit. I mentioned that this country had to fight for its independence. And it won its independence. I should say, although I wasn't living that back there, but I'm so much a part of this now. I feel to say to you, when we fought for our independence, although I didn't live back there, we fought for our independence and we won our independence. And don't think the black man wasn't there now. I think it was Christopher Columbus who gave the first demonstration against Great Britain. Yes. Yeah, they were fed up. They called it the Boston Tea Party or something like that. Yes. Yeah. Instead of delivering it, he started dumping it in the ocean as a protest. Yes. Yeah. Now, this country was first built by people from the country of their first origin as a nation, and they refused to continue as citizens of that nation, because that nation was not giving them enough freedom, and enough independence. Enough independence. They call it Independence Day, the victory. Independence Day was not giving them enough independence. They wanted more independence in their life to realize for themselves the life of their choice. Now this is a people that belongs to another nation that was their nation at the time. They had every right that every other citizen had in that nation or in that part of the world. Now they come to America and they find this new land suitable for them to build a new nation. It's called New Jerusalem, called by different names, the New World, to build this new great nation. They did it with the help of others who were sympathetic. France and others were sympathetic. And they gave them military support, not just moral support with their mouths, but military support as well. And their slaves, some of them asked to fight for the independence of the new world. And their permission was accepted. They fought on the side of the masters. Now here's slaves fighting on the side of the masters. This is not a new thing in history. This has happened in the old world too, where slaves have fought with the nation that enslaved them, or with the nation whose people enslaved them. Yes, so that wasn't a new thing. And then some of them were actually forced to go to war, forced to fight on the side of the master people, on the side of the master class, or the master people, the white race. Independence. Keep your mind on what we're talking about. Independence. We're not talking about the white man, we're talking about independence. Independence. All right. You know, when you really study your religion, for Christians, Christianity, for Muslims, Islam, Al-Islam, and see what God is giving the believer, offering the believer, inviting the believer to. When you see that through devotion to God, God is establishing a relationship for you with Him. A relationship. A powerful relationship. Powerful relationship. And in both of our religions, no matter how high up you are, how big you are, or how small you are, you have direct access to this great God that created the heavens and earth. You don't have to come to Imam Nebuddin Muhammad and say, I need Allah to help me. Where is Imam Nebuddin Muhammad? I ain't Allah, brother. Don't ask that question if you want Allah. Where is Imam Nebuddin Muhammad? I need him to help me. I need Allah to help me with my life. You can go directly to Allah yourself. And I saw the Muslim Journal, beautiful, said, what's faster than light? What travels faster than light? Prayer. Prayer. Oh man, did I like that chapter. I want to look for our teacher up and just hug him and kiss him one time anyway. given 3 hugs and 1 kiss. On his cheek, of course. Our forehead. Right there. So he got something behind that forehead. The brain up there. Good brain. So anyway, I know you liked it too when you saw it. You had to like it. What travels faster than light? Prayer. Before you get the word formed, God got it. Yes. Before you get the word formed, God got it. But for yourself, you have to form the words and say it out. For your own mind. That's bad. And as far as God being closer to somebody else than he is to some other person, only because of the purity and good deeds of that person. But if a person whose life is neglected, who's far away from purity, if that person can fear it, begin to, in his soul, beg for God, God will come to that person just as quick as you come to the one who's been pure and righteous all his life. Yes, it's just as quick for that person as it is for the person who's been quick and pure and righteous all his life. Righteous deeds, that's what I mean. That purity and good righteous deeds in his life, doing it. Yes, just as quick. There's a saying of Prophet Muhammad. He said, the one who has done injustice, there is nothing between him and his God, not even a thin veil. Now, you know, they say Moses spoke from behind a veil. The prophet said, not even a thin veil. So we get to God, we have freer access to God, than whoever that was speaking to Moses from behind the veil had. Yes. Now, independence. When you form that relationship with God that God wants, and you devote yourself to worship God as the authority above all other authorities, then what you're saying is that my boss has a boss over him. That's God. You're saying that my president of these United States, he's got a boss over him. That's God. That's what you're saying. And most people know this. But some of you that's working for self-interest, you work so hard for self-interest, you forget who your boss really is. You'd be shining boots and licking boots and doing other things and brown nosing. And you forget who the real boss is. You forget that person you're trying to impress to get up a little higher yourself has a boss over him or her. So when you form a relationship with the boss, God, you then can have your independence through your worship of God. So God himself created us for independence. That's how come it's in us. And that's how come it drives us. We're not satisfied when somebody asks too much of us. So they're asking me to make them my God. I can't have that. There's a limit to how much I or the president or the pope or anybody will command your life. There's a limit. You're not going to let them command your life except but up to a certain limit. And then you're going to say, no. Hey, what are you trying to do? What are you asking of me? Now, what is that rebelling against them? The same thing that turned Jonah around. Made him go back, pick up his interest. Same thing that made Moses stand up to Pharaoh. Same thing that made Abraham tell Pharaoh, the God that created me will guide me. Not you, Pharaoh. Yes, the same thing. There is, Muhammad put it this way, I think he put it, yes, I recall, peace be upon the Prophet Muhammad. He said, every landholder or farmer, he has a special piece of land in his land. He has land, his whole farm is his, but he has a special little piece of that farm that he gives very special and personal attention to himself. He said, likewise for God. He says, God, he has a area that's prohibited to all but to himself. And that's the core of every person's soul. The core of every person's soul belongs to nobody but God. He doesn't want me in there talking and telling you what to do, and he doesn't want the President of the United States in there talking and telling you what to do. He wants no authority in there but him talking and telling you what to do. In the core of your soul, for want of a better word, in the most important, most sacred area of your soul, that's what I mean by core, the core, the ORE of your soul. Yes. So that's where your independence is. And you were born with that soul and with that independence. And it's that special privacy, that sacred privacy, that makes you tell somebody sometimes, you won't listen to anything that I have to say. I'm entitled to an opinion, too. You assert your rights to be heard. You have a right to be heard, too. Now, when we were enslaved, or brought over here as captives on ships or whatever, ships, yes, our authority in our own life was taken away from us. Not part of it, all of it. All of it. We ourselves were property, so we couldn't own anything. Everything we had belonged to our master, even us. If you had clothing, the clothing and you belonged to your master. If you had sleeping quarters, the sleeping quarters and you belonged to your master. Whatever you had, that and you belonged was the property of your master. Until he sold you to another master or whatever, or until you died. But no matter how much a man possess another human being, or a woman, because you got a lot of women slave masters that's not in the book, not even in history at all. A lot of women slave masters. I know because I had one that attempted to enslave me. Now I got to fight that thing to get back on track. This got a mighty sheep of something in my life. All right, I think I got her going now. She's moving on out again. All right, so this independence in the core of your being was put there by God. And then God frees you, even from him as the authority. Isn't this wonderful? Yeah. God frees you even from him as an authority. He creates you, and then just as a baby is born and can't remember anything about his life in the womb. Born and can't remember any of the pain that it suffered being brought out
by the doctor or by the nurse, the vet nurse. Can't remember it. Can't recall any of that. Likewise, the God that created us, he made it impossible for us to recall that he was the one who created us. So we come into the world and we don't know who created us until somebody help us get on the path. Or until trouble in the world drive us to ask some questions. Yes. We don't have to have somebody help us all the time. Enough misery or enough joy will make you wonder, how come I'm getting all of this misery? Or how come I'm getting all of this joy? And it makes you turn to the dark. But you know it's not in the light. The answer is not in the light. You have seen it a long time ago if it was in the light. So you turn to the dark of your own mind. And you begin to search the midnight of your own mind for that God. For whatever's responsible for that. You don't even call it God. You just want to know what's responsible for this. Why am I like this? Why am I made like this? Yes. So it is so wonderful that this God creates us and then frees us even from himself. He's not even in your life as your boss. But you got something else in your life. It's an invisible boss. It's a hidden boss. It's your own self. But it's in the sacred core of your being. And it every now and then will speak to you. See, when are you going to do something with your life? It will speak to you. When are you going to leave that wall that has brought you down to zero? You're less than a dog because of you following that woman around and doing whatever she asks you to do. The captain told me once, he said, a brother came to him to confess. And the brother said, "Captain," I can't say any either one of their names. Said, "Captain, I want to come to the temple. I want to come to the fruit. I want to be a good FOI. But my wife, see, she just put the hands on me and I'm afraid of her. Really, I'm afraid of her. And she tell me when I can't come out. And I can't come out, Brother Gary." Captain said he decided to talk to that sister and then both of them together. That sister said, "Yeah, he tell you who his God is, but I know who his God is." He stood up to the captain. And they had a little hot argument, and the sister took him on back home. I can't give you the full conversation. It's X-rated in part. So anyway, even that brother, he kept enough hell. That independent self that God made to be independent of other bosses, but only under one boss, God, will speak out and tell that woman, "No, it's the end of this. I ain't taking this anymore. I got to have some respect for myself." Walk out the door and never look back. Powerful core we have in our being. Powerful core. God created that for him. And that's that sacred peace or area in the land. That's the sanctuary for God. Yes. That's your independence. Your independence is there. That's what drives men to do what many, many great men of religion, of politics and government did. Turn from the way, established way of their world at the time, because they can't believe in the core of their being that the human being was created for such a taxing, punishing life. So they turned from it. We were slaves, property of slave masters. But the slave master couldn't boss that sacred piece of land inside of our being that was created for our independence to worship God above all authority. It was created for our own self-respect. They can't command that area. Bilal, just one of many slaves. We could come much closer to ourselves in time. Rosa Parks. She didn't know whether she was going to be lynched, killed or not. But she stood up because something in her core said, time out for this. And they put in jail. They arrested her and put in jail. But she stood up. We, as a people, were stripped of all of our independence except the sacred self, hidden and unconscious in the soul of our being. And something had to happen to wake that self up. That sacred, hidden self in the core of our being. Mr. Farrar's teachings were so powerful and so different that for many who could not have that sacred self awakened, the teachings of the Nation of Islam was powerful enough to awake that sacred self. Awake it to its responsibility. Say, I'm somebody. As the Reverend Jesse Jackson preached into our ears, I'm somebody. He didn't tell us that first. For many of us, that sacred self that was sleeping in the core of our being, like Jonah was sleeping in the hull of the ship, just finally realized that, hey, this ain't me. I have to become myself. Independence. The most precious independence is this independence that I've been speaking to you on for a good little while now. That's the most precious independence. That's the independence that made possible the independence of the New World, the United States of America, from the old world, from Britain, England. That's the independence. If that hadn't been burning and speaking and burning in the founding fathers and in those that came on the Mayflower, etc., there would not have been a call for any new independence. Those people would have went on forever satisfied to serve the old world and to serve their old country. They would have been nothing but colonies forever for the old world, for the old country. Yes. Don't think the term Islam, the religion Islam, is your biggest calling. Ah, I shook you then.
that's not your biggest calling. Your biggest calling is your independence. So you be free to give due respect to your maker and due respect to yourself. It didn't have to be Islam. It could have been some other religion or some other ideology. But thank God it was Islam. For me, I thank God it was Islam. Because I believe in my soul that my foreparents were Muslims on the continent of Africa. They were not heathens. They were not worshippers of idols. They were not animists. They didn't worship life. And they were not Christians. They did not worship Jesus Christ. That's what I believe firmly in my soul. And I believe my father descended from those people. And I descended from those people. So I thank God he rewarded me, he's given me back what was taken from my father. And that is their religion when they were in Africa. He has given it back to me. Before, I was comfortable with Islam. It wasn't Islam driving me to want to know God better. It wasn't Islam driving me to want to know and understand my father better. It was not Islam driving me to want to know Scripture better, the Bible, the Christian thinking, their thought, their religious thought. It was not Islam. God knows it was never Islam. It was my own curiosity. In the core of my being, I wanted to have these questions answered. I couldn't live with this darkness. I had to see the light. And I didn't know if the light was going to be Islam or the light was going to be something else. At one part, I say these communists sound better than these religious folks to me. I read where the communist said religion is the opium for the common people, or the opium, the dope for the masses of people, meaning the common people, not educated that well, and have no class, no high status in the society. I said to myself, he's right. That's exactly what I said as a young man and a young minister at that time. I said, these communists are right. I didn't tell you that. I knew better than do that. I don't realize Muhammad would ship me out before I was shipped out. But I said to myself, they make much more sense. Because that's what I saw it as. All that religion. I'm in my house. My father didn't allow us to even have a radio when I was a young boy. We couldn't have a radio. That's a fact. We couldn't have a radio. It was against the law of the Nation of Islam to have a radio in your house. We could not have a radio. But on Sunday morning, man, those church people were so loud. I'm in the house, no radio. And I hear the Christian church sermon going on just like they in my house, so loud. Window down, new putty been put on the bed, filled the cracks. Still blasting in the house there. Jesus, Lord Jesus, boom, just jumping. Got the house shaking a little bit there so loud. And I know what was in that house. I know the family was in that house. I know how they live. And I walk out of that house, 5308 South Wabash, walk out of that house and go on the street and walk 2 blocks over to State Street. And there I see a church on almost every corner. And between the blocks, you got about 2 or 3 churches between the blocks. And you got just as many liquor stores. And you got bums and wine heads hanging around all outside the liquor stores. And going to the church when the church goes over. So you can see how I bought that the communist charge, that religion is the opium of the masses, the dope for the masses. Yes, I bought it. I said, they're right. That's all it is. It's hypnotic, just like a drug, just like wine or drug. It's hypnotic. that makes them forget their condition and makes them forget their responsibility. I saw it acting on people just like a drug. Yes. Now, we know all churches run cheap like that and irresponsible like that. We know there was a few first-class churches that were doing a good job to keep their members conscious and living a good life. But most of them didn't. They weren't. But look here. Even the worst church with the most ignorant preacher, even that church was telling the members not to sin. To live a godly life, not to sin. But the people were so miserable, so poor, suffering so many things, mostly the bad material condition in their life. They were suffering, and poor and suffering so much that the powerful psychology of the church to make them feel good, the lively music, the happy singing, sent them back home not conscious of their responsibility to do something about their life. So though he told them, live righteous, obey God, don't sin, sin is death, they couldn't hear that, especially after the music and after the singing. They just felt good. Just like you giving a man wine and he's getting high. After a while, he's so high, he got another spirit in him. Hey, man, come on, man. Come on over here. Give me your hand. Let me hug you, man. I ain't hugged you. You know you my buddy, man. You my buddy. Now, he's high now, and you telling him, you told him before he got that high, you told him, sin is death. And remember it after that. He doesn't remember sin is death. If you had told him the worst sin is not drinking, the worst sin is not swearing, saying MF every two or three words in your language. He said the worst sin is you not respecting your human life. If the preacher had told them that, I think they would have been able to drink his wine and get sober. And then after they sobered up, they would have went to work on their responsibility. But the preacher didn't tell them that. This independence that we're given is no small independence. It's a big independence. It's given in the Bible in Genesis. It says, and God created the man and put him in the garden. And the garden was a paradise. It means just beautiful, pleasant, all good. God created the man and put him in the garden. And the garden is understood to be, or to mean, the existence in this world. That this world, before sin comes into play, was made to be a garden of paradise for human life. Now we know if we just can get the things out of the way that's not right, this world will be a paradise. As it was in the beginning, the Eden, the Garden of Eden, paradise. So God says he created the man and put him in the garden, and his wife, of course. And he charged the man to attend the garden. So here the man is given a big responsibility. And if we interpret it the way learned students of theology or learned students of scripture interpreted, that it means, firstly, my own soul, the garden of my own life, and secondly, the garden outside, the external world. If we interpret it that way, then we see that God is giving the human being that he created a great independence and a great responsibility. Independence to cultivate his own soul, and independence to utilize what's outside of himself, of this world, as God says in our Quran, in our holy book, and in the Bible, if you, I get another, in different words I could give you. Whatever is in the skies and whatever is in this earth, God has placed it at your service for you to utilize it to make your life richer and better. If we accept then that that's the responsibility that God created every human being for, male and female, every human being for, male and female. Oh, no, it's for the male, the Khalifa. Well, do you think that? Adam was the first Khalifa. And Adam was a man, yes. But Adam was once existing in one soul. And that soul was called male and female. All right? And God, who created that one soul, made it male and female. He caused the separation and created the first father and the first mother, the first mother and the first father, and brought from them all the men and women on this earth. So we are talking about Adam. And Genesis says what the Quran interprets. Genesis said, and he made them. And he, God, made them male and female, and he named them, Adam, in the day that he created them. That's Genesis, on the creation of man. So both books are saying the same thing, huh? That this male and female also are in one. Created he them, male and female, and called them Adam in the day that he created them. He created them plural, but called them one name, Adam. So Adam is the soul that's in every human being, male and female. Adam is the sacred core in the soul of every human being, male and female. So Adam is me singularly, and Adam is humanity taken all together. Huh? So if God says he made the man, Adam, he didn't say he made any man. He didn't say any man. We could call him Joe or whatever. God fixes so you have to call him by a proper name that God gave him, Adam. God says he created the man, Adam. And he says, and he told the man to attend the garden. This is the Bible. And everything, says the fish of the sea is for you. Everything. This is what Genesis says. And the Quran puts it almost in one statement. It does put it in one statement. Says he has made to be of service to you, whatever's in the sky and whatever's in the earth. Genesis is saying the same thing, but with different language, different narration. God is saying to us, and this is what make men great men. This is what make great men and great women of religion. When they see this language of God, they see themselves. God's language is not to show you himself. God's language is to show you yourself. So when they see this great language, they see themselves. And they say, wow, am I this? I have to respect myself more. I have to do more with my life. God made me a creator. God made me a boss in charge of great things, big things. God made me and trusted me with my own life. God trusted me with my own life after he created it. And God trusted me with this powerful environment we call the world and all the powerful things that's in it. God entrusted this to me when he created me. I don't see how anybody can believe that and not go forward in a positive way with their lives. I don't. That's what was driving me. I didn't know this. I had never read this in Genesis. I had never read this in the Quran. All I know is that something was in me, inside of me, that couldn't be satisfied with all the darkness that was in the way of my vision. That's all I know. And as I said, it was not Islam driving me. It was a lot of big question marks driving me. A lot of big question marks driving me. Now, we have moved from the smaller creation to the bigger creation. And even the smaller creation is so big that God had revealed to us that that small creation is not bigger than the external world, the whole universe. God says to us in our holy book, he says, "And man think not that your creation is a bigger creation than the heavens and the earth." He made this world to serve us, even the angels. He made even the angels to serve us. But we are not bigger as a creation than the world outside of ourselves. No. God makes that plain to us. Say, but man is foolhardy and cocky, hasty. He gets a drink of the heavenly juice and it goes through his head so quick that he gonna rush out now and think he can manage the whole world by himself. If he rises to the top of a nation and that nation is victorious over other nations, now he's going to take it upon himself to manage their lives too. He's going to tell them how they should live, how they should run their lands and their nations. Foolhardy, hasty, cocky, thinking he has to be told then, right? Your creation is not bigger than the world. The world that God made is a bigger creation than you. He has to be told that. Praise be to Allah. So we're talking about the bigger interest now. Now, understand that all of this is made for Adam. Jesus is recognized in the New Testament for his greatness. But Jesus, in the narration about his greatness, his own life goes back to Adam. It says in the Genesis of Jesus Christ is on this wise, and it goes on to trace backwards, go backwards, connecting Jesus with his past life until it gets to Adam. And it says, and he was created by God. So Jesus' life, according to the New Testament, his genealogy of his life goes back from himself to his mother and to those that were before his mother, on and on and on, until it gets back to Adam, the man that was created by God. So what is the origin of Jesus' being? Adam. Adam. Just as it is for all of us. And that's why the prophet gave us the picture of steps up in the heaven, the great steps up to the heavens. And he gave us the picture of Adam on the first level. And then Jesus Christ and John on the second level. And Joseph on the third level. And Joseph, on the third level, yes. And Idris on the fourth level. Some say that Idris is Ezekiel in the Bible. I don't know. I can't say that's true or false. And the fifth was Moses and Aaron.
No. The fifth was Aaron. Sixth is Moses. And the seventh is Abraham. Abraham. So these are the steps up the ladder. These are the steps up the ladder, according to the vision of Muhammad the Prophet, peace be upon him. And he said, at each level, how were these men greeted? They were greeted, peace be unto you, brother, my brother. All but Adam and Abraham. Even Jesus has to greet Adam, my father. Just as Muhammad had to greet Adam, my father. And even Moses, powerful prophet, he has to greet Adam. He has to greet Adam, my father. Oh, somebody may be stirred up there. Oh, but God was Jesus Christ's father. Read again the genealogy of Jesus Christ in your Bible, New Testament. And as far as God being the father of Jesus Christ, God was the father, in that sense, of every prophet. Of every prophet. And every prophet that was made prophet by God, oh, it was a powerful conception. A powerful conception. When that prophet became a prophet upon the inspiration of God. This is not to say we don't I accept that Jesus is Christ. Yes, we do. Muslims, all Muslims, if you understand your religion, you have to accept that Jesus is Christ. And that Jesus was not the son of a man. Son of a man. Well, you just said he was son of Adam, didn't you? Well, who said that Adam had to be a man? I said he was male and female in the beginning. In the beginning, he was not just a man. He was male and female, according to his Bible and according to our holy book, the Quran. And Allah says in our holy book, says, the same one who created the earth, the world, from the beginning, has the power to recreate it, to create it again. He who had the power to make a man from dust certainly has the power to make a man from a woman. Yes, Independence Day. Independence. God wants us to be independent. God that made us, created us, along with all other human beings, want black people in America and all over the world to be independent. He wants us to have the same independence that he wants every human being to have. The independence to live the richness that he created for you in your soul and in your brain, in your makeup. He wants you to live that richness to its fullest. Oh, it's great wealth. There's a great wealth in the creation of a human person. He wants you to live it to its fullest. And he wants you to live it not as a single person. That's why Adam must be called also the many, as well as the individual. He don't want you to live that just for yourself. He wants you to live that for humanity, for the human race. He wants you to do it for the human race, not for one. Because originally, he did it for one, but that one was the capsule, the atom, from which the human race would exist. Was not it? So in the beginning, all men and women were in one, in the one God created. Now, when we want to go up, rise up from our inferiority, rise up from our poverty and ignorance, rise up from that to high station in the world, we should try to connect with the God that created us for that rise. Connect directly if you can't find a leader that you respect. But if you find a spiritual leader that you respect, connect with that, behind that leader, through that leader. Connect up again. And then work not just for yourself selfishly, but work for yourself but with charity in your heart to see all men and women get where you want to go and have what you want to have.
This is what God created us for. And it says charity starts at home and spreads abroad. And in the Quran it says, same thing, you have to know how to relate, yes.
But there's something else I got on my.
You have to know how to read your book and the Bible together. You have to know where they correspond, where they flow together. All right. So, we know that Muslims, too, are obligated to live not just for yourself, but for your fellow man. And for all people. Allah says in the Quran of Muhammad the Prophet, says, and he is a mercy to all the worlds. A mercy to all the worlds. The first people to claim him was the Arabs. And then the Africans and others, Persians and others, in that close vicinity of the land of the Alps, the peninsula of the Alps. They claimed him. And I believe even today, they are not seeing him correctly. Most of them. He's not for Arabs to claim. He's not for Africans to claim. Are Pakistanis to claim? Muhammad is for humanity to claim, mankind to claim. God didn't create Adam for the white race. He created Adam so all people will have their life from him, from their first father. He didn't mission Muhammad so Muhammad could become the leader for Arabs or for Eastern people. He created Muhammad, made Muhammad the man, the prophet he is, and the messenger of God, so that he would become a mercy for all people, to all the world. This is what you have to know in your heart and understand it clearly. Then it will motivate you to respect other people more, to have an interest in other people more, to want to build not just for yourself, but want to build so that all people will find pleasure in what you're doing, will find gratification in your work, will find some contribution to their life in what you are doing with your life. This is the way it has to be. Independence. Here is the people now, deprived of their, denied their independence, stripped of their independence, robbed of their independence, having their independence taken completely away from them. No human being in the history of man have had his or her independence taken away so thoroughly as did we by slavery, New World style. Yeah, then no joke, very serious. All right. No matter how much a parent dominates a child, that parent never takes away the individuality of their child and the freedom to act and to have a life as much as slavery took away our individuality and our freedom to act. Yes. So we lost our independence completely. Afraid to even think our own thoughts if we thought those thoughts were against the interests of our slave masters. Many of us. Now, you know, you had the strong ones, but they were few. They were very few, like Nat Turner and a few others, Frederick Douglass. Very few, the great many, couldn't think. And believe me, you got too many of us right now can't think. We can only think to the extent that we know the white man approves.
And it's not the modern white man. We still got that old ancient white man in us telling us what he wants. We ain't acquainted with the new reality enough to hear the voice of the new white man. That same old ancient white man talking to us still. Then you know you're a nigger. You know you're inferior. Don't you listen to the black bushels telling you you could have a CPC. What is a CPC? What the hell is a CPC? Collective Purchase Conference. Yeah, you know ain't no nigger got no authority to go to another country and buy no goods from them without a white man leading them. So you better not join that CPC thing. Oh, ancient white man talking in them. Yeah, you let him talk all he want about Allah's God and the boss over the United States and the president. Don't you believe that? You listening to another nigger. That's all you listening to. Now, girl, are you going to stay with me or listen to that boy you got there?
No, master. I'm going to listen to you.
That's her. That's her and him. He said, that's him. I was talking about her. Now, let's come to the word loyalty. Then we're going to bring the two of them together and close out. Now, look at the word loyalty. When you hear the word loyalty, loyalty says that the person who has to be loyal or is obligated to be loyal is not absolutely independent. Not absolutely independent. You owe somebody something. And the first loyalty is to God, isn't it? If we are religious people, first loyalty is to God. And you know he gave a covenant to Abraham. Yes. And it's mentioned in our religion that now the covenant that was given to Abraham has been passed on to the Muslims. And the Christians say it was passed on to them through interpretation, translation and interpretation. It was passed on to them through Jesus Christ. Through Jesus Christ. It's a new covenant. And we have a new covenant. It's a new covenant that came from Abraham, our father Abraham. Or the Millah of Abraham. We have a covenant. And we should be loyal to that covenant. That's the first loyalty. Be loyal to the God that has found you for yourself. You hear what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Found you for yourself so that you would have yourself. Be loyal to that God. Then you know we have to be loyal to the nation where we have citizenship. If we're a citizen of the United States of America, we need to be loyal to that citizenship. Loyalty is very, very important. Don't get back to independence. Loyalty, very, very important. If you break the first loyalty, you're going to lose the first independence. If you break the loyalty to God, you're going to lose the independence that God created you for. You won't have that independence anymore. You will think you're independent, but you have the independence of a rat. You'll fall from the independence of a man to the independence of a rat. From the independence of a man to the independence of a hog. From the independence of a man to the independence of a dog. Huh? From the independence of a man to the independence of a snake. That's Genesis. Huh? Yes. So you won't keep that independence if you break the loyalty. Now, we want to be as independent as we possibly can be in this United States of America that celebrates its independence for all of its citizens, I'm included, every July 4th. We want to have our independence inside of this great nation that knows the value of independence. We cannot have that independence without also respecting our citizenship and obligation on us to be loyal to this government in which we have and enjoy citizenship. Now, if we were going to have some argument with this, we should have argued in Frederick Douglass' day. We should have argued when Rosa Parks was in jail. But now that Rosa Parks is out of jail and living a good life and they ain't leading no demonstrations, it's time for us to stop having these problems with our independence as citizens of this United States of America. Loyalty. Loyalty. We have to be loyal also to the best tradition of our own people. Mama taught you something that stands up now after you became a Muslim, just as strong as it stood up when she told it to you and you were Christian. Be loyal to that. Be loyal to the very best advice that you got from your Christian parents, from your Christian relatives, from your Christian friends, from your Christian church. Be loyal to the best that you got from them. Just because you're a Muslim doesn't mean you're not going to be loyal to that stood your life up before. If it was good, it's good in Islam. Islam doesn't come to throw away anything good. Islam is not here to condemn anything good. That's why God says to us in our holy book, and cooperate, work together. Cooperate upon what is standard established knowledge. It didn't say Islam. God did just reveal to prophets. God created man and created him good and excellent. That's what he says. Yes, and made your form beautiful and excellent. That's what God said. So he did that before a prophet was made. Before a prophet was given a book, a revelation, a message. God had made your form, and God said he made it beautiful and excellent. So that means you already had habits in your life. You already had principles in your life. You already had high values in your life. You already have respect for the thing that is more important, the sacred thing, an idea of what is sacred in your life, even before he sent the first prophet. Human beings on this earth had that. And you know, in our religion, that's called the Muslim that God created. Say, God created you and named you Muslim. This is in our holy book. And named you Muslim. He named you Muslim. Yes. And I guess the Christians and Christian who understand Christian theology, they will call it Christ-like. The Christ in man. Praise be to Allah. Allah Akbar. Loyalty, loyalty. We have a history that begins with us being slaves, being on ships as captives, and then made slaves in the New World. We also have a history of being in Africa, but that history is dead. It was denied us, none of us, and they can't get any help for it either. Now we know of a gentleman, fine gentleman, who traced his lineage back to Africa. And he says that his family can be traced all the way back to Kunti Kinte. Kunti Kinte. Kunti Kinte. Kunti Kinte. That's his relative. Alex Haley. Relative. Before slavery. Kunti Kinte.
Quincy Kinsey. All right. K.K. Quincy Kinsey. Quincy Kinsey, boom, boom, boom. Quincy Kinsey, boom, boom. Sounds like somebody getting ready to write a song. Quincy Kinsey. Anyway, he said he can trace his relatives back to Quincy Kinsey. But how many have done that? How many can trace their relatives back to Quincy Kinsey or anybody else? How many can even trace their family back to a particular part of Africa? Very difficult. We would do a more accurate job of telling you where you came from by just studying your features and matching you with the people on the continent of Africa. We would do a much better job. And understand that all countries, hardly any country, have been made up, their populations have been made up of all one people all the time. So even though you came from Africa, it doesn't mean that you perhaps were there always. You could have come from some other part. You could have come from Saudi Arabia. Your father's first fathers could have come from Saudi Arabia and went to Africa. Yes, they're so close together. Saudi Arabia and Africa are just like that. At some point, you can throw a rock from Saudi Arabia into Africa. Look at the map. All right. And you could have come from Persia. You could have come from, who knows, India. Who knows where those people come from. So give up that thought. I got to know my race. And I'm black. And I'm give up that. That'll wear you out forever. And they know it too. That's why they want you to get hung up there so they know you'll be occupied forever. And get nowhere on this earth. God knew that human beings were going to be scattered all over the earth, and they were going to be looking for that national pride. Yeah, my nation was this, my nation was that. God says, and all of you are created from Adam, and Adam was created from dust. That's where your great history goes back to. Your great history goes back to dust. To the dust of the earth. That's your first home. The dust of the earth. Not Ethiopia. The dust of the earth. So if we think origin is going to connect us with our great brightness and brilliance and pristine essence and power. Show me all that in dust. So God says that's where he made you from originally, from dust. Clay, water, dust. That's enough for me. That tells me that all human beings have common origin in the dead earth. That's what God means by dust. He means that dead, no life. He made you from death and gave you life. So all human beings have origin in common earth, common dead earth. And it was God that created them for life and created them for human identity. And he made you human before your social interactions and progress as a social unit brought you into these other names, tribe, nation, etc. Independence and loyalty. So loyalty implies that there's not complete independence, it's a shared independence. Because I have to be loyal to somebody, then my own life and my own freedom and independence depends on that relationship being supportive of my freedom and independence, etc. We want to make great progress in America. We are not where our souls bid us to go. Our souls want us to go much further than we have gone. The end of the road is not to have the government recognize us as equal citizens along with other citizens. The end of the road is not for us to have opportunities to make as much money as another person that belongs to this great nation, or to rise up high and become the president of a bank or the president of these United States. No. The bidding in our souls for us to go much further than that. So how can, what is further than that? Further than that is to have your own, to reclaim your own. I'm using the words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his teacher in the Nation of Islam. To reclaim your own. If you reclaim your own, then you want to get back what was taken from you. And what was taken from you was the opportunity to accept or reject another national life, a cultural life. You listen to what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
But you were captured, and you were not given the freedom out of opportunity to say, I don't think I want this life that you're going to make for me in this new world. So if God is God, then God himself is obligated to give us back what was taken from us. If the world can't give it back to us, God is obligated to give it back to us, because they took from us what was God's own property. It was not their property. They took from us our human life and the ability to have it in our own hands. They took that from us. They took from us the freedom to exercise the biddings in our sacred core that God created, and he said no one is to plow in that area but himself. And they locked it up. They denied it expression. So to restore me, for me to reclaim my own, I have to have the freedom to listen to my core, the sacred core of my being. And we have to ourselves do things that will write our history over again. Yes. We have to write history over again. It doesn't take all of us. We don't need 20 or 30 million African Americans to do this. The whole world began with one Adam. We don't need everybody to do this. We just need those who have the strongest whispers in the core of their being. That whispering to them is not enough yet. You haven't restored yourself enough yet. You know, if a bird is born, a sparrow, and if something could be done to make that bird forget that it's a sparrow, and it starts believing it's a crow. Now it's living with crows, and it's given full citizenship in the nation of crows. It sits on the highest branch of the tree with crows. It hunts as a free citizen of crow nation, with crows. But one day in the sacred core of that sparrow, there's going to be a whisper. And he's going to start being unhappy with the crows. Unhappy with the crows. Now, our professional class of African Americans, they are that sparrow group. And they've been with the crows. And they go and fly the highest branch in the tree.
Bill Cosby, way up there in the top of the tree. Oprah Winfrey, way up there in the top of the tree. Colin Powell, way up there in the top of the tree. All these great black giants, sparrows, way up there in the top of the tree, thinking they crows. And soon as it dawned on them, from the core of their being, you're not a crow, you're a sparrow. Oh, they start weeping on the branch. See, how come this professional class running, get freedom and then run into a dead end and have no more enthusiasm for building the race? It's because they're gradually beginning to realize that they're not white folks. And never will be white folks. We're not created to be white folks. You suppose Allahu Akbar, God is greater. You're supposed to have a black person song in your soul. You're supposed to have a black person light in your soul that was turned on by the same God that turned a white man's light on in his soul. And until God turns light on in our soul for ourselves and free our minds to live for ourselves, and to build a better image of our own people for ourselves, just like the Nation of Islam asked us to do, but do it in the name of truth, sanity, and charity for all. And I guarantee you, you will rise. And you will rise in independence. You will rise in respect for loyalty too, buddy. And you will find the doors of the world opening up to you. The nations opening up to you. Opening up to you. Welcome. And you won't have to get it there and say, yeah, well, you know, they had us in there, but you could feel, man, they still don't accept us. That's what the professional class is telling us all the time. Well, you know they don't still don't accept us, man. You get your independence, they'll accept you. You have to get your independence. And your independence is not to change life from a sparrow to the life of a crow. And don't envy the crow because he got a little bigger body than the sparrow. That sparrow is wise. I feed them in the back in my backyard almost every day. And the sparrows and the crows, they eat together. Crow come in, he's bad, you know. Come in, he walk high and bad. Stepping high and bad. Sparrow pretend he ain't even around to see if he'll be decent. If he come at him, sparrow just takes off. Sparrow say, you ain't going to be around here always. Now, some birds, they got human sense. See, I gave you a picture of a sparrow. You know, we got much more sense than sparrows. Some birds, they got strategies. There was a big bird in the territory of these smaller birds. And there wasn't but so much food there. And before, the smaller birds hadn't been enjoying it. These newcomers now, they come and they got big stomachs. They eating up all the food. This is the truth. This actually happened. A bunch of these little smaller birds flew on the back of this big bird and loaded up on the big bird until they weighed it down. And every time a big one came in, they would do that. They flew on the, just got on the back of the big bird and kept getting on the big bird until they weighed the big bird down. Big bird got out of the area. Got back out of there. They reclaimed their territory. This actually happened. I got a witness to this. In fact, I didn't see this. I got a witness to this. The person told me this happened right around his yard. Yes, he saw this. And once I saw
more than one birth, small bird on the back of a bird. I don't know why they're there. That's what I say, boy, they go for plane rides too. I didn't know what they were doing. But he said, this bird was flying. He managed to scare them with it. About two or three birds. I know it had to be two. I believe it was three. At least three birds were on the back of this big bird. Yes. Some birds ride the back of other birds. They do that. Some small birds. They know how to ride the back of bigger birds. You can see this in the Nature series on television. Nature series. Programs on nature. Yes. So I'm going to conclude this now. So what I want to do with this address today, and what I want to do at 2979 167th place, when we run the out there, is to tell you that our struggle started before the Temple of Islam. Our struggle to reclaim our own started before the nation of Islam. Started before our acquaintance with Islam. And God was with us then, back then. All of us who were sincere and wanted to be right with God, God was with us and God claimed us. God claimed us that these are my people. These are my servants that have been taken from me. Yes. You take a human being's life out of his own hands, you take that person from God. So God said, these are my people that I'm claiming again because they want me in their lives. See, God won't come into your life unless you invite him. But we invited him. Even before Nat Turner, our people in slavery, suffering the evils of slavery in this new world, they invited God to come in their lives. They had nothing else. And he accepted to come into their lives. So whether you know it or not, I know that God was with us to reach the height that our souls are yearning for. As long as it's lawful and honorable, God wants us to get there. And now, God is one, according to our book and the Christian sacred book, God is one that when you are done an injustice and you turn to God for help, to have him be your God and you be his servant, he does not just give you what was taken from you. He multiplies it. He gives you much more that was taken from you. Now, this is the way of God. In the Quran called Sunnatullah. Sunnatullah. This is the way of God. Now, what was taken from me? The right to be responsible for myself, to manage my own life, to plan my own future on this earth. That's what was taken from me. Now, if God's going to give me that back and give me more, he's a God that doesn't only give you that what was taken back, he gives you much more. So you know what that tells me? Guess what history tells me? Bible history, world history. Guess what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told me? That our destiny is not just to rise, but to rise up to be equal with the best on this earth. With the best on this earth. And it's God's way many times to give the leadership in the earth to people who were robbed like we were robbed of our independence and of our human dignity and self-respect. Yes. So I believe that God spoke through many before the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I believe he spoke through the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I believe he speaks through all people. And the more responsibility you have in the life of people, the more important you are to God. Because now you're affecting many people. And we all belong to God.
So I believe that God has taken us as a special people for him to give his special favors to. Special favors to. That means we are not going to be just well off as a minority group or well off as blacks or as African Americans. We are going to be high in the order of the world. High in the order of the world. That's our destiny. Our destiny is to be high up in the order of the world. And we don't have to worry about it. Because God is taking care of it himself. Don't have to worry about it. How are you going to do that, Brother Imam? I'm not going to do it. I'm going to just keep working. God is doing it. God had was done doing it before. God is doing it now. I'm just going to keep working. Because God speaks to each and every one of us. God speaks to and through each and every one of us. And the ones who are pure, and by pure I mean you're innocent. You ain't got nothing devilish in your mind you want to do. You ain't got no selfish plan that you want that's going to hurt somebody else or disrespect the rights of others. Persons like that, God speaks to you and God speaks through you to others. Okay? And I know, see, there's always a few who get the big picture of God, what God is doing. Many get small pictures of what he's doing. But a few will get the big picture of what God is doing. And I know that this season in our life now of struggle to get our life in good shape is the season of group effort, collective effort. And there are going to be those among you, I don't worry about it, who's going to come together. You're going to come together as Christians. You're going to come together just as professional people in some professional area. And many of you are going to come together as excellent Christians. And many of you are going to come together as excellent Muslims. And God is going to bless Imam W. Dean Muhammad with the excellent Muslims. Yes. Not anybody else. God is going to bless Imam W. Dean Muhammad with the excellent African-American Muslims. All of them. And we're going to take this work all the way. And we're going to be seen as the Honorable Marcus Garvey said, we're going to be seen connected again in the constellations of the heavens. That's going to come. Am I holding paper in my right hand? I am. If you can't see it, that doesn't change the reality. I'm holding yellow paper in my right hand. And as true as that statement is, it's not as powerful and as true to keep on ringing and living until it's fulfilled as my statement to you. We're going to go rise up into the highest order of the world. And Imam W.D. Muhammad is going to be the leader of the best of the Muslims, African-American Muslims. Allahu Akbar. So it's good always to be with you all. And I thank Allah for us. For us. That he brought us together. And I will see you soon, inshallah. God willing. Peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Join us next time for the national public broadcast of W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American Leader. For more on the ministry of W. Dean Muhammad, call 1-708-798-6750. All right, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. for WDM Publications, call 1-708-862-7733. All right, Post Office Box 1944.